Hi, friends, and welcome to
the Bitchery of History. My name's Allison.
My name's Max.
This week, I'm going to be talking about Valentina Tereshkova.
Oh my gosh. I'm going to be talking about Nellie Taylor Ross.
Taylor, yes. Not Taylor.
Google was trying to correct me, and so was Microsoft Word. It is Taylor, T-A-Y-L-O-E.
Wow, what a cool name. I've never heard that
before.
I agree.
Before we dive in, though, Allison, happy Women's History Month.
Oh, thanks. I'm so excited. So equal. 11 months out of the year are for the men. 1 month for the women. Small steps.
We have more women in Congress than we've ever had before.
We have indeed. There's a lot to celebrate.
There is. Progress has been made.
Yes.
And also in celebration, we're going to be doing something special with our episodes.
We're going to release one every Monday.
Woo!
We're going to re-release some old episodes so people can catch up. It's like doing the history of the Bitchery of History.
Whoa.
Inception.
Mind blown.
So good.
Happy to be back. Also, that rain was...
It was bananas.
Terrifying.
I took videos and sent them to my family in North Carolina because I myself make fun of LA and when it rains and people freak out.
Uh-huh.
And when I'm home, they make fun of people that freak out in LA when it rains. But it's very similar to how people behave in North Carolina when it snows.
Yes. Or when there's the threat of snow.
However, the LA River, which is very close to my apartment, normally has like maybe a foot of water in it on like one side.
Sure.
Maybe a duck or two. Maybe. And I went down there. I literally saw a tree float by. I'm not joking. Like, hand up on a Bible to God, whatever you want. It was like a massive...
It was a moment.
Yeah, I took a video and I was like, don't make fun because there's no drainage and now my street is also a river.
It's just the LA River.
Yeah, so literally kept us apart from recording.
It did. One of the crew members who works in the bungalow with me came out and said, do you guys notice that the power, like the lights keep flickering? And I said, that's lightning.
What?
We get it so infrequently here that she didn't realize there was lightning going off.
Baby.
I know.
I just feel like I need to give that person a hug.
I know. She grew up here, so I was like...
Oh, there was hail, too.
Yeah, there was.
So it was pretty bananas.
It's been wild. So you got to hear one of my favorite episodes.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I didn't even realize it wasn't on the feed.
Ooh.
So it was like brand new for everybody.
Exciting. I know.
So let's...
So anyway, now we're back.
Mm-hmm.
So buckle up. Get ready for blast off. If you don't know who Valentina Tereshkova is, you will learn. And also, you should know. She's one of the few women that I feel like is sort of talked about, but maybe that's just my experience because I read a lot of books growing up. And a lot of people spout the fact of like Sally Ride, first American woman in space, Sally Ride, who we've covered and is wonderful and
and
did many amazing things.
Sure.
But like the Trivial Pursuit fact is, who was the first woman in space ever? Valentina Tereshkova.
Yes.
So get ready.
Oh my gosh. Deep dive. Let's go.
Deep dive. So Valentina Tereshkova was born March 6th, 1937 in, I'm going to say, Mashlinokovo, which is a village near the
Close
Volga
enough,
River.
Sure.
It's about 170 miles northeast of Moscow. Just bear in mind that Russia's freaking ginormous. So like...
It's huge.
It's a village far away from other places.
North Korea and Finland are separated by one country, and it's Russia.
That's a Trivial Pursuit fact that I love, and my brain exploded. So her parents worked on a collective farm because it's Russia, and her father was actually killed during World War II. And so Valentina left school when she was 16 and worked at a textile factory, but she continued her education through correspondence courses. And then sort of through her patriotism and because of her father's involvement in the war and because it's Russia. She joined the factory's Young Communist League, and she soon advanced to, you know, fully joining the Communist Party. But she became interested in a very peculiar hobby, I guess, to, you know, counterbalance the working in the textile factory, which is probably pretty boring.
Tedious.
So she said, you know what I'll do for fun is some parachute jumping. Casual.
That's a leap. It's a left turn.
You know, like,
this is like Barbara Cartland, who's like, I'm going to write books, but also glide.
But also be a massive part of D-Day that is not ever discussed, which I'm still mad about. I just have to say. Still mad about it. Where was that in Saving Private Ryan? I'm looking at you, Steven Spielberg. I am looking at you. If you want to look back, that's great. We can totally have a discussion about it. Yeah, so she takes some parachute jumping and she joined the Yaroslavl Air Sports Club. We're going with it.
Sure.
So Yuri Gagarin became the first man in space, the first human being in space, sure, in 1961. And so Tereshkova volunteered for the Soviet space program, feeling very inspired by him. And also, I assume, just being like, well, parachuting's not enough. What else can I do? Blast a rocket into space? Sure. So she didn't have any experience as a pilot, but she was accepted into the program, the space program, because of her 126 parachute jumps. Hobby parachute jumps.
How is she getting up three times a day? Yeah, over what period of time was this?
I think it was a few years.
Okay.
But still, that's like one a month.
52 weeks in a year. You're at least doing it. If it's 3 years, you're at least doing it every week.
Yeah. So a lot. Very dedicated parachute jumper.
126 times more than I ever want to jump out of a plane.
I could never go skydiving.
That's for sure. No.
I will pass out, and then I won't pull my parachute, and then I will splat on the ground.
Well, you'd be tied to someone else, but you'd miss the whole experience.
Yeah, because I would pass out. I almost pass out on the Mummy ride at Universal. I guarantee you I'll pass out if I go skydiving. Like, I'm not being hyperbolic.
Sure.
I will 1,000% pass out and remember nothing. Anyway, that's a total side tangent. The reason that these parachute jumps are important is because at the time, cosmonauts had to parachute from their capsules seconds before they hit the ground returning to Earth. They hadn't figured out the whole, like, soft landing in the ocean in the capsule. They hadn't sorted that out. So they were like, great, she can parachute. You know, we're going to blast you into space. You're going to circle the planet. Then you're going to come back. And after all of that, we want you to jump out.
While it's traveling at a significant speed. Sure.
So she's accepted into this program along with other women. They had several women who were training, mm-hmm, and that training included weightless flights, isolation tests. I will say, I think I could pass isolation tests really well. Like, put me in a sensory deprivation chamber and let me just float there for days. I will be happy as
you
a
know
clam.
That. I believe that.
Yeah.
I know. I know you.
Centrifuge tests, I think I'd pass out on those. Rocket theory, spacecraft engineering, an additional 120 parachute jumps.
Sure.
So we're now almost at 300.
Were those part of the training, or was she just doing those for fun?
It says that's what training included, but I mean, who's really to say? And also pilot training in jet fighters, casual, like, quick way to teach you how to fly, just put you in a jet.
Mm-hmm.
The group spent several months in intensive training, so just months of, like, doing this all the time. The State Space Commission of Russia, obviously, mm-hmm, nominated Tereshkova to pilot Vostok 6 at their meeting on May 21st, and this was confirmed by Nikita Khrushchev himself.
Uh-huh.
Tereshkova was exactly 10 years younger than the youngest Mercury 7 astronaut, Gordon Cooper. Fun Trivial Pursuit fact. So very young. And it is believed that she was chosen partly or even mostly because of the fact that she was from a poor province and was pretty. So this sent a very good socialist message, mm-hmm, of, like,
sure,
you can come from this tiny town, unpronounceable,
it's the Russian
by the Volga River. You know, if you just are willing to jump out of a plane like a couple hundred times,
right,
and you look good,
mm-hmm,
you can go into space.
It's the Russian dream.
Exactly. Now, she is chosen, mm-hmm. gets blasted off into space, mm-hmm. circles the Earth, and during this flight, because she's in like a really tight, cramped in little capsule.
Sure.
So she can't really move for about 70 hours. Woof. And she experienced nausea and physical discomfort for much of the flight, orbiting the Earth 48 times. She spent almost 3 days in space. And it's reported
now.
Did
she have food?
I don't know.
Like frozen ice cream or something? Or freeze-dried ice cream?
I don't know, to be honest.
Interesting.
She might not have. I assume she must have had water.
Right. Maybe she carbo-loaded beforehand.
You know, I really don't know. I didn't come across anything about that. Of course you would be like, where are the snacks? I love it. The reason also that there might not be information about it
uh-huh.
is, great segue, there generally was kind of a lot of, not secrets kept around her space flight, mm-hmm. but it was all just like, the flight was very successful,
sure.
and she is great, and well, nothing went wrong, because we are Russia
a big propaganda
forever.
Thing.
Exactly. And it actually is now reported that she may have passed out on the flight, and she also drifted off course. It's reported now that she actually started like falling away from the Earth, you know, like getting out of the orbit thing that she was supposed to be in, and had to like figure out how to sort that out. But at the time, this was not discussed.
Sure.
And even now, like, the details aren't really clear.
Sure. Because the last thing you want is to shoot your astronaut into space.
Into like literal space
uncontrollably,
forever.
Right.
Exactly. But this was all covered up at the time because Russia is so amazing.
Right. It's not.
And I mean, it was pretty amazing.
Secrets kept, it's selective storytelling.
Exactly. And it was pretty amazing. They had two astronauts actually circling the Earth in opposite directions. So then they would pass each other and like communicate via radio.
Could they wave?
I think they couldn't. I've seen some videos and I don't think that you could wave. That's why I'm like, I don't really know if she had food. Like it looks like there's like maybe you have some pretzels in your pocket and that is it.
An M&M in your...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
An M&M in your where? You need to finish that
sentence.
I was
going to say in the helmet. So when it floats up, you could...
Oh, that's fun. You can't leave that hanging. Anyway... With a single flight, she logged more flight time than the combined times of all American astronauts who had flown before that date. She also maintained a flight log and took photographs of the horizon, which were later used to identify aerosol layers within the atmosphere. Fun fact.
Okay.
However, this was the one and only flight that she ever flew.
Mm-hmm.
It was launched 2 days after Vostok 5, which... was in a similar orbit for 5 days. So that's the one where then they were passing.
Oh, okay.
That had Valery Baikovsky.
Mm-hmm.
And they would get within about 3 miles of each other and communicate by radio, as I said. So he was in space longer.
Mm.
And they had plans for further flights by women.
Mm-hmm.
But they just... for whatever reason, canceled them. They also never let her go back into space. It took 19 years until the second woman, Svetlana Savitskaya, flew into space.
Mm-hmm.
And none of the other women in Tereshkova's early group that trained with her ever flew in space.
Interesting.
It's Russia.
I wonder why. I feel like we've talked about Svetlana Savitskaya on this podcast before.
We may have in passing. I don't think we've done her exclusively on an episode.
Right.
But we have done a lot of like badass Russian women. So I wouldn't be surprised if she came up as a side story somewhere.
Right.
However, there are still interesting facts about Tereshkova's life.
Mm-hmm.
She married a fellow cosmonaut in 1963 at the Moscow Wedding Palace with Nikita Khrushchev presiding the wedding party with the top government and space program leaders.
Good Lord, that's kind of amazing.
And also like a lot of pressure, I feel like.
You better say yes.
Yep. So in 1964, June 8th, nearly 1 year after her space flight, she gave birth to their daughter, Elena. And Valentina and her husband were the first people to have both traveled into space. So Elena's the first person to have been born with a mother and father who traveled into space before conceiving a child. So there was a lot of interest into like
space
the pregnancy and the space baby and all these things. Sure. And Alina eventually grew up to become a doctor, probably because of this early exposure of like testing, sure. all the things. So because she never flew back into space and also wasn't trained as a pilot, she only got to go into space because of parachute jumping. Tereshkova eventually evolved to become a politician. And she was chosen for several political positions from 1966 to 1974. She was a member of the Supreme Soviet of the Soviet Union from 1974 to 1989, sure. a member of the Presidium of the Supreme Soviet. She was in the Central Committee of the Communist Party and retired from the Russian Air Force and the Cosmonaut Corps in 1997 by presidential order. She's still alive, and she became a well-known and is still a well-known representative of the Soviet Union abroad. She was a member of the World Peace Council. She was the Soviet representative to the UN Conference for International Women's Year in Mexico City in 1975.
Wow.
She led the Soviet delegation to the World Conference on Women in Copenhagen. She was decorated with the Hero of the Soviet Union Medal, which is the USSR's, former USSR's, sure. highest award. She was also awarded the Order of Lenin, the Order of the October Revolution, and other foreign orders, including the Karl Marx Order, the United Nations Gold Medal of Peace, the Simba International Women's Movement Award, the title Hero of Socialist Labor of Czechoslovakia, Hero Labor of Vietnam, Hero of Mongolia, Hero a lot of places. In 1990, she received an honorary doctorate from the University of Edinburgh,
aww.
And Tereshkova Crater on the far side of the moon was named after her. After the collapse of the Soviet Union, Tereshkova lost her political office, but none of her prestige. She's still revered as a hero to this day. And she was invited by Prime Minister Vladimir Putin's residence for the celebration of her 70th birthday. That's where they celebrated it. And while there, she said that she would like to fly to Mars, even if that meant it was a one-way trip.
She's looking to break barriers again.
Mm-hmm. In 2008, she was a torchbearer of the 2008 Summer Olympics torch relay in St. Petersburg.
Aww.
And she was recently elected to the State Duma, the lower house of Russian legislature, in 2011 as a member of United Russia, where she continues to serve.
Look at that.
Right?
I like that. I like stories about people who just served their entire life. It's amazing.
She's super cool.
I mean, I know we joked a lot at the beginning and made a lot of, you know, light of things, but you're right when you said that that was an amazing thing. I mean, it truly yeah. was. Think about how terrifying that must have been.
I recently was listening to a podcast, and I'm totally going to forget which one, which is terrible, because I'd like to give them a shout out, but oh well.
Mm-hmm.
But they were talking about I think it was Unexplained. Anyway, they were talking about the first flights with animals into space, like with monkeys and with dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all those monkeys died and all those dogs died, which I did not realize when I was a kid reading about them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it really is heroic yeah. to be like, even, you know, she's willing to go to Mars now on a one-way trip because she already yeah, did something she thought could have been a one-way trip.
She's stared know? Death in the face already. Yeah.
Oh, so good.
Absolutely. What a hero. All right. Nellie Taylo
I'm so excited.
Ross, America's so excited. First female governor.
Ooh.
Okay.
Love it.
So Nellie Davis Taylo was born on November 29th, 1876 in St. Joseph, Missouri. Her parents were
Missouri. Love it.
Her parents were James Wins Taylo and Elizabeth Blair Green. Her mom's family actually owned a plantation on the Missouri River.
Mm-hmm.
And Nellie was the sixth child as well as the first daughter to be born to the family. Nellie's dad did the best that he could to work the land, this family plantation that they had.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately couldn't make ends meet and ended up having to sell the land in pieces in order to keep the family yeah. sustained. And unfortunately by 1884, all of the land had actually been sold and ooh. the family moves to Cloud County in northern Kansas. While in Kansas, her mother dies.
Ooh.
Not exactly sure what of. I couldn't find out in my...
It's the 1870s in Kansas.
It could have been anything.
It's this is terrible. It's the Oregon Trail. You woke up, oh, snake bite. She died.
You have died.
Literally nothing you could do.
Dysentery. Nellie at this time is finishing high school.
Okay.
Her father had started a business, which fails by 1892.
Oh, no.
And the family moves once again to Omaha, Nebraska.
Okay.
Now, while in Omaha, she teaches private piano lessons and actually attends a teacher training college for 2 years. And she goes on to teach kindergarten for the next 4 years. Everything changes for her when she goes on a trip to see family in Tennessee in the year 1900. She is 24 at this point.
Okay.
And she meets William Bradford Ross. And I've seen a picture of Mr. Ross. And he's a...
He is
a
handsome
fella?
He's
pretty handsome, if I do say so
myself. There were some serious lookers in the 1900s.
For real, though. For real. And they became friends. And
you can't see it, listeners, but Max 1000% just did air quotes around the word
they
friends.
They became friends. And on September 11th, 1902, they were married.
They became good friends.
They became friends. William was a lawyer who, at that point, was really interested in moving to the American West.
Hmm.
And so the couple moved to Cheyenne, Wyoming, where William quickly established himself as a progressive Democrat in a deep red state. Now, you have to think about it. Like,
okay.
Wyoming at this point had maybe three people in it. No, maybe like 3,000 people in it. So it's not that hard to get involved in politics. Like, you could door knock the entire state or your entire little city in, you know, 2 weekends. And so he very quickly becomes influential. Progressives, as a side note, a kind of a sad side note, progressives at the time wanted to break up monopolies, protect the poor, improve the government, and provide good drinking water, food, and drugs for everyone.
Why is this a sad note?
Because this is exactly what they're still for.
Gotcha.
We're still fighting for this.
It's 2019. I should be protesting for the honeybees by now.
Yes. Yes. So William spends the next 20 years running mostly unsuccessfully for a series of public offices. And during this time, Nellie was just living her Wyoming wife life. She was getting involved in the social scene. She was attending parties and
domestic AF.
Exactly, doing domestic AF. William would win a seat as a prosecutor, a city prosecutor. He loses re-election. He runs for state senate. He loses by 6 votes. He runs for the U.S. House and he loses again. And then in 1922, he runs for the governorship and he wins.
Whoa.
Surprising everyone, including himself.
Oops.
But unfortunately, fate had other plans. A year and a half after what had actually been a very promising time in office, he's a Democratic governor in a deep red state. And everything was pointing towards him getting reelected.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, he got appendicitis.
Oh, no.
In the 1920s.
That means you die.
Yeah. So on October 2nd, 1924... He died of complications from an appendectomy.
Somebody didn't wash their hands.
Right. So he's buried on October 4th in the morning. And that afternoon, the state Democratic committee approached Nellie about running to fill the seat.
What?
Yeah. Now, Nellie...
Shout out to Wyoming. Shout out to Wyoming. Well, that's amazing.
We've talked
about... to the Wyoming Democrats, anyway.
We've talked about Wyoming in the past, in particular because Wyoming is the first state in the Union to give women the right to vote.
Yeah, because they know what...
And they did it like something like 30 years before. I think it was 1896 or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, 1869.
Because they know what up.
Exactly. And so Nellie's not entirely unknown during this time. She had spent all of the social time primarily as a member of the Cheyenne Women's Club, which was a space where women met to give and hear talks on cultural and political subjects.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in this setting that Nellie masters her public speaking skills. And so she's initially reluctant, but eventually agrees. She agrees in air quotes because by the time she agrees, they had already signed her up to run.
Oh.
But she agrees eventually.
Okay.
And while Nellie doesn't campaign for herself due to still mourning her husband,
right,
the fellow Democrats of Wyoming took out ads on her behalf. One Democratic senator, John B. Kendrick, noted, quote, how fitting it was that the equality state be the first to elect a woman governor.
The equality state.
Remember, Wyoming gives them the right to vote in 1869. We get the 19th Amendment in 1920.
60 years early?
About.
I'm ready to move to
about,
Wyoming.
Or 50 years. One of the other ads mm-hmm. that was taken out on Nellie's behalf was Beat Texas to It. And this is because Texas...
I love Wyoming more and more as we go on.
Texas actually also had a woman running for governor at this time.
Mm-hmm.
This woman's name was Miriam Ma Ferguson, whose husband had also been governor right before, except he hadn't died. He had been impeached and removed from office for vetoing appropriations for the University of Texas. And so she was running to, like, restore the family name. And
somehow I feel like this plan backfires.
It doesn't.
What?
Nellie Taylor Ross is the first elected female governor in the history of the United States by like a couple hours.
Whoa.
Yeah. She's actually, Miriam Ma Ferguson is sworn into office 15 days after Nellie Taylor Ross, just because
wow.
of how the calendars lines up. So Nellie Taylor Ross becomes the first woman sworn in as governor of a U.S. state on January 5th, 1925.
Wow.
She wins the race by about 8,000 votes, which was actually a larger margin than her husband.
I mean, I'm just saying.
Right. I wanted to read her inaugural address because it's literally 250 words.
Oh.
Yeah. So this is it. Owing to tragic and unprecedented circumstances which surround my induction into office, I have felt it not only unnecessary but inappropriate for me now to enter into such a discussion of policies as usually constitutes an inaugural address. The occasion does not mark the beginning of a new administration, but the resumption of that which was inaugurated in this chamber 2 years ago. It is well understood, I am sure, that it is my purpose to continue, as I am convinced it is the desire of my state that I should, insofar as changing conditions will permit, the program and policies then launched. I avail myself of this opportunity to acknowledge the gracious consideration shown me by Governor Lucas during the period he has served as chief executive of our state, and to say that I look forward confidently to that same degree of cooperation with him and the other state officers and with the legislature that during my husband's term lightened for him the burdens of official life and contributed to his satisfaction and joy in service.
Woof.
Really. Nellie would go on to continue her husband's policies on tax cuts, government assistance for farmers, and strengthening prohibition laws. She proposed her own policies on banking reform, city, county, and school budgets. And when I say that, they didn't have budgets. She required them to have budgets.
Smart.
Selling crude oil and protecting children, women, workers, and minors. Unfortunately, the legislature in Wyoming only met like once a year. So,
well, it took that long for everybody to get there.
Well, fair. but so she didn't get all of that done, but she did get a couple of those things done. She runs for re-election in 1926, but is actually narrowly defeated. She blames her loss on her refusal to campaign for herself and actually for her support of prohibition. Mm. Cecilia Hendricks, who campaigned for Nellie, wrote to her family in Indiana her observations on the re-election. And I thought I would just read these observations to kind of surmise her re-election. You know, in this campaign, the Republicans have constantly argued that no matter how well Governor Ross had done, the governor's office is no place for a woman, but is a man's job. Our Democratic speakers have been telling this story, and then after telling of the schedule she has been filling, more strenuous than any man candidate ever had, because the people everywhere took matter in their own hands and arranged for two or three extra meetings each day. they say, that are sure it's not a man's job, for no man could stand up under such a strain, and no one but a woman could meet all the requirements placed on her everywhere.
Word.
Yeah.
Real.
Nelly does at the end start campaigning for herself. She plays that gender card about a month before the election, saying that if she lost, the whole country would say that the first woman governor had been a failure. Quote, I appeal to you not to place me in a false light before the nation. I do not think you will repudiate the first woman governor. But they did. She lost by 1,365 votes out of 70,000. Yeah. So incredibly close.
Close, yeah.
After her defeat, Nelly remains an active and vocal member of the Democratic Party. In fact, when Al Smith wins the Democratic nomination for the presidential election of 1928, she gives speeches in his support all around the country because, of course, she's not only one of the most well-known members of the Democratic Party at this time. She's also one of the most famous women in all of America at this time.
Wow.
And she actually campaigned for him even though they disagreed on prohibition. Further to that, in 1928, at the Democratic National Convention, she actually gave a speech seconding his nomination, Al Smith's nomination, which is, of course, a huge deal for anyone to give up a speech at a convention. But for a woman in the 1920s,
pretty good.
Huge. And she receives 31 votes from 10 states to be placed on the ballot as vice president.
Whoa!
Yeah. Now, when Al Smith loses to Herbert Hoover, Nelly was offered the job of director of the Women's Division of the National Democratic Committee, in which capacity she directed the campaign for the women's vote for Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Get it.
Now, of course, Franklin wins.
For forever.
For forever. And on May 3rd, 1933, President Franklin Roosevelt appoints Ross as the director of the U.S. Mint, making her the first woman ever to hold that position.
What? Wow.
The Mint's assistant director at the time was actually also a woman. Her name was Mary Margaret O'Reilly, who was known as the sweetheart of the treasury. And she had worked at the Mint for almost 30 years. Initially, the two women did not get along very well due to some possible beef that Nelly had with Eleanor Roosevelt. But shortly, but it pretty fair, quickly, fair. They fair, became fair. Friends.
Okay, okay.
And they became to, quote, appreciate each other's merits. And they grew closer as they worked together.
Yeah.
They actually ended up dividing the labor to run the Mint, with Ross handling public affairs and making policy decisions as needed. And Mary was dealing with the actual day-to-day business of the Bureau. And actually, to this day, this is how those roles interact. Nelly traveled constantly, visiting Mint facilities and making speeches in support of FDR. This left Mary basically in charge of the Washington office as an acting director. One letter Mary writes to Nelly during this time reads, quote, I'm so anxious to have your mind at ease about the office here in Washington that I have resorted to rather frequent telegrams. They are so much more direct and up to date than letters. My love to you and every good wish for the success of your visits to our beloved Mint institutions.
Oh.
So, like, really, you can tell they, first of all, I love the, they are so much more direct and up-to-date than letters. Like, it's this newfangled technology.
That's so good.
But you can really see that they became friends. Yeah. And actually, Nelly's notes from the field and these letters back and forth to one another are essential to historians' understanding of the nation's recovery from the Great Depression, when actually relatively few coins were produced, to the mid-30s, when strong demand for coinage actually led the Bureau to run the mints much more frequently.
Yeah.
Nelly would go on to serve a full 5 terms as director of the Mint.
Wow.
Amongst many of her achievements, she's known for establishing the Franklin half dollar, which actually doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
And she was succeeded by William H. Brett in 1953 when she was 77
Holy buckets.
Years old. 77 wow. years old. She was appointed in 1933 and she retired in 1953.
Whoa.
During her tenure, she had made several smart real estate investments and now had the wealth that she had dreamed of growing up and that she'd lacked growing up. And had the time, she spent the rest of her time traveling, visiting her children and her great grandchildren. She contributed to women's magazines, and she made her last trip to Wyoming in 1972 at the age of 96.
Wow.
She died 5 years later in Washington, D.C.
She was 102?
At the age of 101.
Whoa.
At the time of her death, she was the oldest ex-governor of the United States, and she was buried in her family plot in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Jeanette included these a couple paragraphs from her biography that she wanted us to read. So this is from Nellie Taylor Ross's biography.
Biography or autobiography?
Her biography.
Okay.
Similarly, more recent historians have criticized the women's suffrage movement as having not gone far enough, as having settled for the vote alone instead of stepping further and obtaining real political power. It would be two more generations, many historians believe, before women began organizing for real power beyond the ballot. But women's suffrage was not Nellie Ross's main concern. She cared about her family, but she also cared deeply about getting things done in the public sphere, that is, about politics. She was born during the presidency of Ulysses S. Grant and died in 1977 at the age of 101 during the presidency of Jimmy Carter. She followed her ambition, saw her opportunities, took up the power available to her, and used it.
I love it.
That's Nellie Taylor Ross.
Amazing.
What a badass bitch. Cause of the week?
In honor of Valentina Tereshkova, I have found a cause of the week called the Mars Generation, which was founded by Abigail Harrison in 2015 when Abby was just 18 years old. At the age of 13, Abby began speaking publicly about her dreams of becoming the first astronaut on Mars. And so after a few years, she eventually funds this amazing 501c3 called the Mars Generation, which is a nonprofit with the support of an advisory board of astronauts, engineers, scientists. And the nonprofit has reached over 25 million people in its first 2 years of operation, with work to educate and excite kids and adults about space exploration and STEM education. And you can find them at themarsgeneration.org.
Wow. How cool.
Yeah.
Once again, happy Women's History Month, Allison.
Happy Women's History Month, Max. If you are enjoying this podcast and want other people to celebrate Women's History Month with you,
yes,
leave us a rating or a review, because those ratings and reviews help other people find the show, which helps us keep doing the show. Thanks.
Thanks. If you'd like to keep in contact with us, you can find us on Facebook.
Search The Bitchery of History.
Instagram.
The Bitchery of History.
Twitter.
The Bitchery of History.
I think it's Bitchery Podcast, but if you search The Bitchery of History,
we'll show up.
It comes up. Just Google The Bitchery of History.
We everywhere.
We're SEO'd so well.
Nice.
Yes. You can also find us at thebitcheryofhistory.com, where you can buy stickers.
Yes, to celebrate Women's History Month.
Yes.
Remember, this show would not happen without the whole team, which includes you, our listeners, and also Jeanette,
Jess,
and Sydney.
Oh, I love them so much.
We'll see you next week.
Yes.
Remember,
bitches get stuff done.